To succeed, just let go. This is Willie Horton, exploring how we must and can take control of our state of mind and transform our lives. You're very welcome.
Pick your cliche. Emotions run high. Emotions run deep. But the truth of the matter is that emotions run rings around you. If we look at what's happening in Trump's America at the moment, in Minneapolis in particular, we can see emotions running high. If we look at some of the reaction in Europe to Trump's America, we can see, again, that emotions run deep. But I have a big problem with the word emotion, because it suggests, in the way in which it is normally used, that it is something that is natural. It is something that is almost intuitive, almost instinctive, the way in which we respond to what is going on around us. Truth be told, an emotion is how we react to what is going on around us. And all reaction comes from automated reactive thought. The things that psychology, and there's a lot of research in relation to this, describes as emotions are actually not what you think they are. In fact, they actually are what you think they are. They're the product of thought. They're not a natural response. They're not something intuitive that is brought out of us as a result of being confronted by madness or being threatened. They are the product of thought. And that's what I want to explore here, because if they are the product of thought, it means that we can, so to speak, control our emotions. And in a world gone mad, we need to be able to control our emotions. So I want to split a couple of hairs for a start. I want to start by exploring how there are some real, intuitive, natural responses to what is going on. Real, intuitive, natural responses that could be characterized in the way in which the word emotion is normally used as an emotion. Number one is love. When you fall in love for the first time, you can't help it. Now, maybe that is infatuation. Maybe that is simply an interaction of people's energies. And we've discussed the interaction of people's energies to a greater depth in this podcast. Maybe it's just that, but it is a natural response. Things flood our system when we fall in love. In exactly the same way, things flood our system, without getting too scientific about it, when we experience what I would describe as primal fear. Now, primal fear is explored from a psychological point of view in the context of post-traumatic stress disorder. In other words, something that is so threatening that it grabs all of an adult's attention, enabling an adult to do something that an adult normally never does in ordinary everyday life, and that is take a new psychological snapshot. We know from previous conversations that when we were young and impressionable, wandering around the place, soaking up everything that was being done to us and for us like sponges, we were taking psychological snapshots all of the time. That's how we learned our view of the world. That's how we learned our view of ourselves. That's how we learned all the fundamentals that we carry with us in later life that enable us to make it through the day. We took psychological snapshots, particularly during the third year of our lives, but all the way up to the age of 12 or 13, when our so-called attentional spotlight was shut down for good. Until you experience a threat to your life or loss of life. That is what triggers a new psychological snapshot. That is what triggers post-traumatic stress disorder. Now, as an aside, it's a very important aside, but not directly related to what we're talking about just at this moment in time. Obviously, you can, as an adult, decide to take new psychological snapshots by using your mind in a particular way. And we talked over the last few weeks about the so-called two-piece jigsaw and how when we turn up to the here and now, having taken chosen psychological snapshots as adults in the way in which we described in those podcast episodes, we can set our mind to achieve our objectives. But let's leave that to one side at the moment, because we're talking about emotions here, and we're talking about controlling our emotions. And there are really only two what I would describe as natural emotions, and that is love and primal fear. They're built into us, fear in particular. It's sad to say that the thing that is most hardwired into us through evolution is fear. I suppose if it wasn't hardwired into us, we wouldn't be here as the ruling species on the planet. God help us. Look where that has got us. But I want to go back to all of the things that you would normally consider to be emotions. Anger, ordinary everyday fear, sadness, loneliness, anxiety, frustration, things that we get emotional about on a day-to-day basis, the stuff that gets in the way of our enjoying our lives, actually, simplest way to put it. And again, another important aside here, the purpose of your life is to enjoy it. I could quote various sacred texts in relation to that. This is nothing new. I'm not saying anything that you don't already know or you haven't already been taught. Your purpose in life is to live your life to the full in the here and now like you mean it. You are here that you might have life and have it to the full. That's almost a direct quote from one of the sacred texts to which I have just alluded. But all this other crap gets in our way of enjoying ourselves, doesn't it? The fear of being confronted by the bully at work every day. The fear on return from work of being confronted by the bully at home every day. Or as we said last week when we talked about the morality, or lack of it, of bullying, the fear of coming home in the evening and being subtly manipulated by somebody at home. Because subtle manipulation is one of the bully's art forms, if I can put it like that. And sometimes it is so subtle that we don't even realise we are being bullied, and we don't realise that we are on edge as a result of that subtle manipulation by virtue of the fact that being on edge becomes our ordinary everyday state of mind, our ordinary everyday emotional state. You'll have heard me talk in this podcast at length over the course of the last 5 years about taking charge of your state of mind. We, as ordinary human beings, are in a state all of the time. Very often you will hear people possibly out on a Friday night looking at one another and looking across the room and saying, oh God, look at the state of your man. It's an Irish expression. I'm sure it's an expression that is used otherwise as well, a very judgmental expression of that. It could be that the people who are judging the state of your so-called man are in a state themselves. The truth of the matter is that we are in a state all of the time. Now, if you wake up in the morning and do nothing to take control of your state of mind, you're going to be in a state of mind decided automatically by your automatic pilot. Let's explore that for 1 second by way of a really simple and rather amusing anecdote from a client conversation that I had with somebody a number of years ago. As he wandered through his morning, as he bumped into his nearest and dearest here and there throughout the house and the garden during the course of the morning, they arrived together at the kitchen table at lunchtime. They sat down and she said to him, what's wrong with you today? She said, you're very grumpy and you're getting on my case all of the time. Why are you annoyed with me? And he sat and he reflected and he realised, wait for it, that he was grumpy with her because he had woken up grumpy with her because she had been misbehaving herself in a dream that he had had during the night. It sounds ridiculous, but it provides us with a window into how the automatic pilot works. If you wake up grumpy as a result of a dream that you have had, you're in an emotional state already, the state of grumpiness. Now, all of the psychological research in relation to emotions, and this is why I have a problem with the word emotion and its ordinary everyday understanding, because all of the research in psychology with regard to emotions actually boils down to research in relation to thinking and overthinking. And the next time you feel emotional, you feel your emotions running away with you, stop and consider that it is not an emotion that you are experiencing. It is the product of what might loosely be described as trigger thought. Your thoughts are shooting you in the foot, in the mouth, anywhere and everywhere. We often talk about people walking around with a target on their back. You have a target on your front when you're using your mind normally, and your thinking mind is shooting you again and again and again. And you're saying to yourself, oh, well, it's only an ordinary emotional reaction. And because it's an emotional reaction, I can do nothing about it. Now, that is the rock on which everybody is perishing at the moment, and possibly has been throughout human history since thought overwhelmed us about 7,000 years ago. We won't go back into the development of thought along with the development of so-called civilization and the development of language and cooperation. Cooperation 7,000 years ago is actually a cover story for infighting, violence and conquest. But we won't go there. If you're in an emotional state, it's because of the way you're thinking. It isn't something natural. Let's consider anger. Now, before we actually consider anger, I want to refer to a wealth of research from the World Health Organization with regard to stress. It's research that I have referred to on many occasions here. Research that has given rise to the World Health Organization stating that we are suffering a pandemic of hypertension. In other words, high blood pressure. And that this pandemic of hypertension will kill more people in the developed world in the 21st century than the next five fatal illnesses put together. This idea of a pandemic of hypertension emerges from the World Health Organization's research with regard to stress and what stress does to the human body, and how stress, if it goes unchecked, will shorten your life by 6 to 7 years. Simply by virtue of the fact of, as we've explored before, what stress does to the cardiovascular, immune and digestive systems. And many of the illnesses that people consider to be natural, arising from natural causes, or indeed from genetic predispositions, are actually the result of stress. And if you're scratching your head wondering, well, where do genetics come into this? You know, how does heart disease running in the family impact this? Or, you know, cancer running in the family? And they're ordinary everyday expressions. Oh my God, cancer runs in his family. Heart disease runs in our family. Her father died at 52 years of age from a heart attack. Many leading professions we'll use the quote that I'm about to use here, that genetics loads the gun, but lifestyle pulls the trigger. In other words, you might be predisposed to one or other particular illness, but it is how you make your everyday lifestyle choices that will actually dictate whether you end up suffering from the diseases to which you might be genetically predisposed. Now, that is very important, because when I talk about lifestyle choices, the primary lifestyle choice that I'm talking about is whether or not you control your emotions, whether or not you take charge of your own state of mind. Because, again, referring back to the World Health Organization, whilst they say that low-level everyday background stress, and by the way, low-level everyday background stress is so ordinary and everyday that people who are suffering from low-level everyday background stress will assume that it's normal, will assume that it is an acceptable price to pay for living your life and surviving from one day to the next. But it is killing you. That's the stuff that's killing you. Not the big stress, the low-level stuff, the drip, drip, drip into your cardiovascular, immune and digestive systems that will shorten your life by 6 or 7 years if it goes unchecked. That research makes the point that whilst low-level everyday background stress will shorten your life, Anger will kill you. Anger is stress on speed. That's the easiest way to put it. Anger will kill you. Because anger, obviously, for starters, and anybody who gets angry knows this, will raise your blood pressure. And if you're angry on a regular basis, and I know people who are angry on an everyday basis, if you're angry on an everyday basis, you're killing yourself. Anger will kill you. And yet we see a lot of anger around at the moment. Angry people. And angry people assume that it's all right to be angry because, first of all, it may be what they think is an appropriate response to the madness that is going on. There's a lot of anger, for example, amongst people who are protesting against some of the stuff that's going on in the United States or in Iran over the last few weeks. There's a lot of anger about, and people assume that it's all right to be angry, or perhaps it is necessary to be angry. Somebody asked me recently, surely there is such a thing as righteous anger. No, anger is anger, and anger will kill you. I'll come back to righteous anger in just a minute. Let's stick with the emotion of anger, because it is not a natural response to anything. It is not instinctive. It is not intuitive. It is simply the product of automated reactive thought. As we've said before, when we're operating on automatic pilot, our automatic pilot will choose our state of mind for us, and the automatic state of mind so chosen will actually choose the next thoughts that we think, which will inform our state of mind, which will in turn select the next set of thoughts that we think. It's a vicious downward spiral. That's why people are so stressed at the moment, are so, as we were just talking about, so angry at the moment. And as I said, if stress or anger is left unchecked, it's going to kill you. And you're doing it to yourself. It is not a natural response to anything. It is as the result of your automatic mind selecting some of the programs from the 70,000 thoughts that whiz through your head every day automatically to enable you make it through their day. Anger isn't going to solve anything in this world. A reaction to what is going on is only going to make matters worse, because we all know where reaction to anything that is going on takes us. It's like pouring fuel on the fire. Action is what will change things in your life. Action is what will change things in this world of ours. But action is impossible to take until I take charge of my own state of mind, until I begin to control my emotions. Now, before we go any further, let me deal with the question of righteous anger. Righteous anger is a misnomer, because anger itself, as we've just explored, is the product of your thinking mind automatically reacting to something that it thinks is an affront to your ability to live your life in, if we use the language of last week's podcast, in a moral way, in the right way. And as I said earlier on, in a way that enables you live your life to the full today and enjoy it. Anger is the result of thought. Righteous anger isn't anger. It isn't a reaction. It is a considered action that looks to the casual observer as anger, that may be described by the individual taking that action as righteous anger. But righteous anger is actually a considered action. There's a world of difference, a world of difference between an automatic reaction and you deciding, I'm going to display something that to the casual observer looks like anger. Let me tell you a little related story. I think it makes the point. I had a conversation one morning many, many years ago, long before Zoom, long before the online program, back in Ireland in the 1990s. A client rang me early one morning and said to me, I lost a lot of sleep last night. And as we know from previous conversations here, regular undisrupted sleep is very important for your long-term mental health. But this lady said to me, I lost a lot of sleep last night because late last night, I lost my temper with one of the guys who works for me. I got very, very angry with him. And I had been very good at controlling my emotions over the last 6 months since you and I met. I've been very calm. I've been very cool. I haven't been reactive with anybody at all, but I reacted last night because this guy simply wasn't listening to what I had told him again and again and again. We explored what had actually happened, and what had emerged was that after her trying to explain how this guy was supposed to do his job over multiple conversations, it got to the point where she ended up deciding that the only way he might hear what she was saying was by pretending to lose her temper with him. It wasn't anger. She didn't lose her temper. It was a considered action that she knew she needed to take in the hope of getting through to somebody where all her previous exhortations had fallen on deaf ears. Now, it actually worked. And it worked because it was done properly. It wasn't done from a chain of trigger thoughts. That may be a new phrase I'm using. Let's replace the use of the word emotions with the phrase trigger thoughts, because these are trigger thoughts, and she was not being triggered by her automatic thoughts. This lady had actually decided to take deliberate action, which might be described as righteous anger. Righteous anger isn't anger. I'm talking about losing your temper. I'm talking about getting angry and it feels like you can't control it. That is what we describe as an emotion. In the same way, for example, as many people tell me that they are anxious or fearful and they can't control it because it is a natural response to what is going on. No, it is an unnatural thought-fueled, thought-triggered reaction to what they think is going on. It may not even be going on, because of the way in which the normal mind cognitively appraises what is actually going on, and, as we've said before, uses stuff that we learn during our formative years to figure out what is actually going on in the here and now. And of course, that's not actually going on at all. It is a mirror image of stuff that happened when you were 2 or 3 years old. Let's deal with a couple of the other emotional states that I've just mentioned. Anxiety and fear. So many people tell me that they wake up in the morning feeling anxious. And that is similar to my friend waking up in the morning being angry with his wife because she was mean to him in a dream. They haven't done what it takes first thing in the morning to ensure that their normal automated thinking mind doesn't choose their state of mind, their emotional state, for them at the start of the day. It's so, so, so important when you wake up in the morning, before your day gets going, to take the necessary steps to ensure that you have done your best, humanly best, to take control of your emotional state. We're talking about morning meditation. We're talking about starting your day clear of the noise that would otherwise run away with you, were you to simply wake up and let your automatic mind boot up and boot you. We need to ensure that we are in charge of our emotional state. We need to ensure that we take control of what is going on between our own two ears so that we stop paying attention to the stuff that gives rise to anxiety, fear. I'm going to come back to fear in just a moment. Anxiety, fear, anger, and all the other emotional states that have nothing to do with the reality of where you are and who you are in the here and now. Let's deal with fear, because an awful lot of people are fearful of all kinds of different things and people. An awful lot of people, as I've alluded to already, are fearful of the bully at work or the bully at home. But let's peel it back to something more fundamental. An awful lot of people are afraid of themselves. And what I mean by that is they are afraid to do the things they know they need to do, or they are afraid to say the things that they know need to be said, because they fear that they are not up to the task, or they fear that if they do take the action or say the right thing, other people will look on them in a disparaging way. In other words, they are fearful about what other people will think of them. Now, as I said last week, if you are that soldier, you are wasting your time, because nobody that you are fearful about in regard to how they think of you is thinking of you. They're actually wasting their energy wondering what you think of them. That is the normal human condition. That is the normal product of overthinking, a mind that evolved to ensure that we survive rather than actually live life, live it to the full, and enjoy it. What am I talking about in relation to people being afraid of themselves? It's the noise in your own head. It's the person that you thought you were. It's the little old you that took the psychological snapshot of things that were done to you when you were young and impressionable that has cowed you down and stopped you being all that you could be. So when people talk about being afraid to be brave and courageous, I will say to them, as I've said to you here before, when you're in flow, when you've taken charge of your emotional state, when you've taken charge of your own state of mind, you don't need to be brave or courageous, because in flow, having taken charge of your emotional state and your state of mind, which are effectively the same thing, you will just do and say what needs to be done and said without thinking about it. You see, it's the thinking about it that gives rise to the fear. So how do we respond to the madness of normal crazy people? How do we respond to the bully? I didn't say how do we react to the bully. I said how do we respond. What action do we need to take when we're being bullied? I can't tell you specifically what action you need to take, nor can I tell you specifically what you need to say to the bully. What I can tell you is that if you have taken charge of your state of mind and you are in flow and present when you encounter the bully, you will know in the moment exactly what to do and exactly what to say, and you will know how to say and do it, and you will do it effortlessly without thinking about it. It's the thinking that stops you. If you are fearful of doing something that you know you need to do, it's exactly the same thing. As I said, there's no need to be afraid of yourself. How many of you are there? There's really only one of you. The person who is telling you that you can't do this, can't say that, that person doesn't exist. It's what psychology calls your conceptual self, the person that you thought you were, the monkey on your shoulder, the little voice inside your head that is screaming at you, no, you can't. Yes, you can. Because the person that's screaming at you, no, you can't, doesn't exist. It only exists as a figment of your imagination because of the way in which the automated mind gives your attention to the thoughts that create this monster in your own head. There is no monster. There's only you, the real you, the perfect you, the bit of you that is part of the flowing universe that will know how to act in any and every situation. So let's go back to righteous anger for a minute, which I said wasn't actually anger at all. It was a deliberate decision to, for example, in Minneapolis, go out with a whistle and protest. That is real action. Granted, quite a number of those people, statistically quite a lot of those people, are normal crazy people, and they are actually swept up in the reaction to what is going on. But what I'm talking about is ensuring that in the face of all the madness that is going on in this world at the moment, you can take real action. And the real action that you have to take will become, I was going to say apparent to you, it'll become bleeding obvious to you. The more you are in flow and the more you encounter situations in which you need to do the right thing or say the right thing, situations to which you need to respond in a considered and present fashion. Now, you can't do that if you're not in control of your own emotions. You can't do that on the street. You can't do that in the office or in the factory. You can't do that with your clients. You can't do that at home. You can't do that with your teenage children unless you are in charge of your own state of mind. And most importantly, because you are the most important person in your own life, you can't turn up to your own life and live your life to the full like you mean it and enjoy it until you take charge of your own state of mind, until you control your emotions. The message, as always, is the same. The same as it's been for the last 30 years that I've been doing this. On the 1st of February this year, I will be 30 years working for myself, doing what we're talking about here. It's the same. We all need to take control of our emotions. To get up in the morning and ensure that before the day gets going, my head is in the right place. And as the day progresses, to stop myself on and off during the course of the day, to become aware of how I'm feeling, to become self-aware in the moment. And it's the self-awareness itself that ensures that I am, regardless of what's going on around me, or indeed the noise in my own head, at that moment in time, back fully in control of my own emotions. We talked about earlier on how the diseases that will most shorten your life or kill you are lifestyle diseases. You really only need to get one lifestyle choice right. And that is the choice that you need to make right here, right now. Am I present or am I all over the place? If you choose presence, then you are in the right place. You are present. You are in the here and now. And this is where you live your life to the full. And this is where life can be enjoyed, regardless of what actions you have to take, regardless of the things you have to say. You'll flow through all of that once you're in the right state of mind.
You've been listening to Succeed, Just Let Go. Hope you've got a little something to help you transform your life today.